Okay, so have you ever been in that situation where like a tiny little hiccup turns into this huge problem and
Yeah.
then you end up with all these crazy costs that you never saw coming?
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, today on the deep dive, we're going to get into a really classic legal case, Spang Industries versus Aetna Casualty Insurity.
Okay.
It really shows how a seemingly simple delay
Right.
can actually lead to a whole bunch of unexpected costs.
Right.
And for all you law students out there listening, think of this deep dive as like a masterclass on foreseeability in contract law. You know, it's that fundamental principle that kind of tells us just how far the ripple effects of a broken promise can actually go.
Yeah, that's right. This case, Spang Industries, it's really a perfect example of how something as small as, like you said, a delay can spiral into a cascade of issues and actually end up in a pretty important legal ruling, you know?
And what's so fascinating about this particular case is it seems so simple, like on the surface. But when you really dive into it, it reveals a whole lot about how these like intricate contractual obligations work.
Yeah, it really does.
So today our mission for this deep dive is to kind of unpack what exactly the court considered to be foreseeable in this whole mess.
Okay.
And maybe even more importantly, when they decided that.
Right.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty details of this case.
Yeah, let's start with the backstory. All right, so we're in upstate New York, and we've got Torrington Construction. They've landed this contract to redo a highway.
A pretty big project.
Yeah, big project with a deadline set for December 1971.
All right, so the pressure's on.
Pressure's on.
So they bring in a subcontractor to handle all the structural steel work for a bridge that was a key part of this whole highway project.
Right.
And that subcontractor is Fort Pitt Bridge.
Okay.
And at first, everybody's on the same page. They agree that Fort Pitt's going to deliver all the steel,
Right.
get that erection underway by June of 1970.
Yeah, sounds like a solid plan.
Seems reasonable,
Yeah.
but
But like we know in construction projects,
there are always snags
right, they hit a snag
early on.
early January 1970. Fort Pitt informs Torrington that they're not going to be able to hit that June delivery date.
And I imagine Torrington is probably not super thrilled about that.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, construction schedules are tight.
Everything's got to move.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there was some back and forth, some negotiation there.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of pressure.
Pressing Fort Pitt for a new firm commitment.
Yep.
Did they get one?
So Fort Pitt finally gives a new date promising delivery by early August 1970.
Okay, so pushing it out a couple of
A
months.
couple months, yeah.
And did that happen?
Well, unfortunately, that promise also falls through.
Oh no.
The steel finally arrives at the construction site September 8th, 1970.
So we're talking about a pretty significant delay now compared to that initial June target.
Oh, yeah, we're way behind schedule at this point.
And I bet this is where Mother Nature decided to step in and make things even more interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened, you know, by October 28th. Temperatures in upstate New York had plummeted all the way down to freezing 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, so now we've got a real problem.
A huge problem.
Because anybody who's worked in construction knows that pouring concrete in freezing temperatures is
Oh, it's a nightmare.
a nightmare.
Especially for something like a bridge deck.
You need that concrete to set properly, to be structurally sound.
Right. There are strict requirements about the minimum temperature.
So Torrington had to jump through a bunch of hoops just to get permission to pour the concrete in those
Oh,
conditions.
yeah, special permission just to proceed. Yeah.
And then they had to figure out how to actually do it.
And they had to do it fast.
Because they had that December deadline looming
Looming over them?
and they couldn't risk the concrete freezing before it cured.
Absolutely not.
So what did they
So
do?
they basically had to pull out all the stops. They ended up working nonstop until 1:00 a.m. one day, pouring all the concrete in one massive push.
That must have been expensive.
Oh, it was incredibly expensive. You know, extra pay for all that overtime, renting additional equipment to keep things moving, and then all the measures to protect the fresh concrete from the cold.
So they really went all out
They had to.
to try to stay on schedule.
Absolutely.
So after all of this, you know, they incurred all these unexpected expenses,
Right.
and naturally the situation moves from the construction site to the
Oh,
courtroom.
yeah, of course. You know, Fort Pitt, they've done their part. They've completed the steel work. So they sue Torrington for the remaining balance on their subcontract.
Okay, how much are we talking about?
It was a little over $72,000.
And I'm guessing Torrington wasn't just going to hand over that money without a fight.
Oh, you bet they weren't. They weren't happy.
They had some grievances of their own.
They did.
So what did they do?
They filed a counterclaim against Fort Pitt. seeking around $23,000 to cover the damages they said were a direct result of that late steel delivery.
So now we've got a real legal battle on our hands.
Yeah, we've got dueling lawsuits.
So how did this all play out in court?
So these two legal actions, they get consolidated into a single case.
Okay.
In federal district court.
Right.
And the district court actually sided with Torrington to a certain extent.
Okay.
They agreed that Fort Pitt had breached the contract by being late with the steel delivery.
Okay. So that's a win for Torrington.
It is a partial win.
Okay.
Because the court also acknowledged that Torrington did suffer damages.
Okay.
As a result of that delay.
Yeah.
But they decided to offset that amount against what Torrington still owed Fort Pitt for the steelwork.
Okay, so not a complete victory for Torrington.
No, not a complete victory.
So I'm guessing somebody wasn't happy with this outcome.
You guessed it. Fort Pitt was not satisfied with that partial win.
Okay.
And they decided to appeal the part of the ruling that awarded damages to Torrington.
So this is where things start to get really interesting from a legal standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Because now the appellate court has to tackle this very specific question.
Yeah.
Were those extra costs that Torrington had to pay for all that cold weather concrete work?
Right.
Were those costs reasonably foreseeable to Fort Pitt?
Okay.
Back when they initially agreed to that June 1970 delivery date.
That specific timing. That's key here.
Yeah, that timing feels incredibly important in this whole thing.
Oh, it's absolutely crucial.
To really understand how the court reached its decision.
Right, because we have to bring in like a bedrock principle of contract law.
Okay, lay it on me.
Something that every law student is going to become very, very familiar with.
Right.
The rule from the case of Hadley versus Baxendale.
Yes, Hadley versus Baxendale.
That's it, a one.
The cornerstone of contract damages.
It's a big one.
So for our listeners out there who might be a little newer to these legal concepts,
right,
can you give us a quick and easy to understand explanation of what Hadley is really all about?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So at its heart, Hadley versus Baxendale says that when a contract is broken, right,
yeah, yeah,
the person who got hurt by that broken promise,
yeah,
can only get back the money for damages that both sides could have reasonably seen coming at the time they made the deal.
Okay, so you can't just come out of nowhere and say, well, because you were late with this, I also lost this other thing.
Exactly. It's, yeah, got to be something that they could have anticipated.
It has to be connected.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does that rule apply to this case?
Right, so the court had to figure out, do Torrington's cold weather costs,
right,
fall into those foreseeable damages?
Okay.
And here's the kicker. Was it foreseeable at the time they agreed on that June delivery date?
Right back in the beginning.
Back in the beginning. That's the key.
So walk me through the court's reasoning here, because this is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah. So the court made this really important distinction about when exactly that foreseeability should be judged.
Okay.
They said it's not just about when they signed the initial contract. They honed in on this specific moment back in November 1969.
Okay.
When Torrington specifically asked for that June 1970 delivery date.
Okay.
And Fort Pitt tentatively put it on the schedule.
Okay. So that's when everything became real.
That's when it became real.
It wasn't just a vague agreement anymore.
Yeah.
They had a firm deadline.
A hard deadline.
And that's what the court focused on.
Exactly.
Okay. So then how did Fort Pitt's expertise as a bridge fabricator play into all of this?
Right. So this is where it gets really interesting. The court basically said, look, Fort Pitt.
Yeah.
You're not just some random steel supplier.
Right.
You guys specialize in bridge construction.
Okay.
You're the experts.
Well, you should know better.
You should know better. You have a certain level of knowledge and understanding because of your specialization.
Okay, so what exactly did the court expect Fort Pitt to know?
So the court said that as experts in bridge construction,
okay,
Fort Pitt should have understood how these construction activities typically play out.
Okay.
It's like a sequence of events.
Like a domino effect.
Exactly. You know, they said, look, when you delay the delivery of structural steel,
yeah,
it inherently leads to delays in everything that comes after.
Right.
Especially pouring the concrete bridge deck.
Right.
And they also pointed out that this project is in upstate New York.
Right. Famous for its winters.
A region known for its cold winters and early freezes.
Right.
So they basically said it's totally foreseeable that a big delay that pushes the steel delivery into September,
mm-hmm,
is going to push that concrete pouring into late October.
Right.
When you're almost guaranteed to have freezing temperatures.
Yeah. It's common sense.
It's common sense.
At least in that area at that time of year.
Exactly.
So they basically said Fort Pitt, you should have known this was a risk.
Yeah. They were held to a higher standard because of their expertise.
So Torrington didn't have to specifically spell it out for them?
Nope. the court said they shouldn't have to say, hey, if you're late, we're going to end up pouring concrete when it's freezing.
It should have been obvious.
It should have been obvious to them.
Okay. So then what about Torrington's decision to rush the concrete pour, working all those crazy hours to get it done in one go?
Yeah.
How did the court view that?
The court actually looked at that really favorably.
Okay.
They said that Torrington was acting reasonably and responsibly.
To minimize the damage.
Exactly, to mitigate their damages. They said, look, if Torrington had just waited until spring to pour that concrete, the whole project would have been delayed even longer.
Right.
And Fort Pitt could have been on the hook for way more money.
Because of that extended delay.
Exactly.
So by taking action, even though it cost them more up front, Torrington was actually limiting the overall harm.
Exactly.
So they were being responsible.
They were being proactive, and the court liked that.
Okay, so the court basically said all these extra costs that Torrington had,
they
were a direct result of Fort Pitt's breach of contract.
Right.
And Torrington did the right thing by trying to minimize further losses.
Exactly. And there's a really key phrase that the court used to sum up their reasoning.
Okay, what's that?
They said that the damages were, quote, in the cards, unquote, not special or consequential.
Okay. I like that, in the cards.
Yeah, it's a good one.
What does that mean exactly?
So that means that these extra costs were a natural and foreseeable result of the delay itself.
Okay.
Not some weird or unexpected outcome
that
would have required like a special warning beforehand.
Okay, so it goes back to that Hadley rule.
Exactly, back to Hadley.
All right, so it seems like the court's decision really hinged on two main things.
Yeah.
The specific timing of setting that June 1970 delivery date.
Right.
And Fort Pitt's professional expertise as a bridge fabricator.
Yeah, those were the two key pillars of their decision.
So let's break those down a little bit more.
Right.
What about the timing was so important?
So agreeing on that June delivery date that established the time frame.
Okay.
For figuring out what Fort Pitt should have reasonably foreseen.
Okay.
You know, it set the stage for everything that followed.
Okay. And then how did their expertise fill in the gaps?
Right. So because they were experts in bridge construction, the court said they should have known what would likely happen if they missed that deadline.
Okay.
Especially given the predictable weather patterns in upstate New York.
They should have been able to connect the dots.
They should have seen the dominoes falling.
Okay, so this case really highlights some important practical lessons.
Oh, yeah, tons of them.
Especially for our law student listeners out there.
Absolutely.
So first and foremost, it shows just how crucial it is to have crystal clear performance timelines in any contract.
Oh, yeah. Clear deadlines are key.
Because those seemingly small details about when things need to happen
can
have massive legal and financial consequences down the line.
They can make or break a case.
Exactly. And then secondly,
it
really emphasizes how a party's professional expertise can seriously affect what a court will consider reasonably foreseeable.
Yeah, if you're the expert, you're held to a higher standard.
You're expected to know better.
Exactly.
And you're going to be held accountable for that knowledge.
Right.
So you can't just plead ignorance and say, oh, I didn't know that would happen.
Nope, not if you're the expert.
Okay, so anything else our law students should keep in mind from this case?
Well, it also shows that courts really appreciate it when someone tries to limit the damage.
Okay.
When a contract goes south.
Right.
Like, even if you end up having to spend more money up front to fix someone else's mistake, as long as what you're doing is reasonable, you're probably going to be able to recoup those costs.
The court's going to look at you favorably.
Yeah, they like to see people acting responsibly.
Okay, so it's not just about pointing fingers and saying it's your fault.
Nope.
You got to try to clean up the mess.
You got to be proactive.
Okay, so let's just play with the hypothetical here in a second.
Okay.
What if Fort Pitt wasn't the specialist bridge builder?
Okay.
What if they were just a regular steel supplier?
Right.
With much less specific knowledge about construction timelines? Okay.
Or typical weather patterns in upstate New York.
Right.
Do you think the outcome of the case would have been different?
That's a great question, and it really gets to the heart of why the court focused on Fort Pitt's expertise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's very possible that things could have gone differently.
Okay.
Because if Fort Pitt didn't have that specialized knowledge,
they
could have argued that they had no reason to expect a September steel delivery would lead to concrete being poured in freezing weather.
Right. They could have said, well, nobody told us.
Exactly.
That this was so time sensitive.
Right. And in that scenario, Torrington might have needed to be a lot more explicit about the importance of that June delivery date
and
how a delay could lead to all these cold weather problems.
So the court really relied on the fact that Fort Pitt was supposed to be the expert.
Oh, yeah. That was a major factor in their decision.
Okay. So what's the big takeaway here for everyone listening?
So the key takeaway from Spang Industries is this.
Okay.
When you agree to a specific date in a contract.
Yeah. You're basically saying you'll be responsible for anything that naturally and foreseeably happens if you miss that deadline.
Okay.
And if you're an expert in your field.
Yeah.
Well, then the standard for what's considered foreseeable is way higher.
Right, because you're supposed to know better.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The court's going to expect you to have a much better understanding of how your actions.
Or inactions.
Right, or inactions can impact everything else.
So law students listening out there.
Yes.
As you're learning about all the complexities of contract law.
Right.
Keep this Spang Industries versus Aetna case tucked away in your brain.
It's a good one.
Because it really shows how foreseeability.
Yeah.
And the timing of agreements.
Right.
And the expertise of the parties.
All interconnected.
All come together.
Yeah.
To determine who's responsible when things don't go as planned.
That's exactly.
And think about how these same principles could apply in all sorts of legal contexts beyond construction.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like supply chain agreements.
Right.
Service contracts, any situation where there's a timeline involved.
Because there's almost always a timeline.
And potential consequences for messing it up.
Always consequences.
So keep that in mind.
Important stuff.
Thanks for diving deep with us today.
It was a pleasure.
Hopefully this deep dive into Spang versus Aetna shed some light on the whole concept of foreseeability.
Yeah.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.
Looking forward to it.